Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, your designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Glad to be back with you once again, and in case you're wondering, this is not my normal rotation. I'm usually here the third and fourth Sundays of each month. This is, of course, the fifth Sunday, but tonight I'm filling in, I think, for George Norrie. Maybe it's Ian, but I think it's for George Norrie, and very happy to do it. A special hello goes out tonight to all of the friends of Coast to Coast gathered in Southern California for the annual MUFON Symposium, which ended earlier this evening. I know among the speakers, a couple of them today that we know real well on this program, Stan Friedman and Linda Howe. John Alexander was there yesterday, along with remote viewer Joe McMonagle, an amazingly talented man. Wish I could have been there to hear some of the presentations this year, but it wasn't possible. That symposium by MUFON, by the way, traditionally the most credible and most important UFO conference of the year. Also, the new MUFON Journal is out at the same time. Good article in there by Stan Friedman about a topic we have talked about often here on this program, the new book about Area 51. Pretty rough take by Stan Friedman, but the points he makes are not only fair, they're probably mandatory to make in regards to the wild tale that is told about alien-looking, bug-eyed, big-headed teenager refugees from one of Dr. Joseph Mengele's labs, flying a saucer at the behest of Joe Stalin to scare the pants off the rest of the world, especially we Americans. Quite a tale and quite a few problems with it, in case you get to read this column by Stan Friedman in the current issue. Another week, another alien-themed movie, this time Cowboys and Aliens, the big release of the week. The box office looks slightly disappointing for this film, though. Looks like this movie will end up in a tie with The Smurfs. Tied with the Smurfs for number one at the box office this weekend, at least number one in dollar amounts, tickets sold. Both of these movies made a little over $36 million. For the Cowboys and Aliens movie, that's about $4 million less than the experts had predicted. And for the Smurfs movie, it's about $15 million less than or more than they expected. I mention Cowboys and Aliens because that is the theme of this E.T.'s flying saucers interacting with gunslingers in the Old West. That's also a theme for the opening episode of Ancient Aliens, Season 3, which is, of course, a program carried on the History Channel. I don't know if you've seen this program, but it is very popular, understandably highly controversial. It looks at the interactions between perceived aliens, call them what you want, and humans, dating back through human history. Historians and archaeologists predictably hate it, but audience seem to love it. Tonight, my guest is the consulting producer and one of the stars of Ancient Aliens, Giorgio Tsoukalos, who is also the publisher of Legendary Times magazine, which covers many of the same ancient mystery type topics. I expect to learn a lot tonight in what shapes up as a lively discussion of a wide range of issues. I mean, gods and angels and ancient astronauts to the pyramids, Atlantis, the Bermuda Triangle. We have a lot of ground to cover, and Giorgio will be joining me less than an hour from now with some hints about what surprises he has in store for viewers in the upcoming season. We'll also, of course, cover a lot of the material already broadcast in his program. Before we get into other news of the day, very sad note to report. It's about Dr. Brian O'Leary. I don't know if you recognize that name, but Brian O'Leary was the first man picked by NASA to go to Mars, long before the Mars program was canceled. He's a visionary guy, a brilliant man, a champion for alternative energies, and more importantly, always champion new directions for our planet. I know he's been on the program a couple of times over the years. I had the pleasure of interviewing for television a couple of times back in the 90s. He's spent some time with us here in Las Vegas. Just a class act. But I received reports from friends of Dr. O'Leary that he died at his home in Ecuador. He was 71 years of age. I don't have a way to get a hold of his wife, but at this time, so I'm taking it on the word of his friends and loved ones. This is a big loss for all of us, I think, even for people who did not know Dr. O'Leary. Just an amazing guy. In other news, looks like a deal has been reached on the debt ceiling that will avert a government default. The president and congressional leaders struck this deal a couple of hours ago. It's kind of complicated. Democrats will hate it. Republicans will hate it. The public will probably hate a lot of it. And it looks like the whole thing is going to erupt again a couple of months from now. But for the time being, the can has been kicked, or rather maybe nudged a little bit further down the road. Still has to be approved by both houses of Congress tomorrow to get this thing done, which is not a given because a lot of people are going to be upset about it. But I suppose if they took the trouble of announcing this deal, chances are they've already counted the votes. Asian markets already open tonight. It's morning over there, of course, reacting favorably to this news about a deal. CNN is reporting tonight that the suspect in Norway's terror attacks bought chemicals and tools on eBay that he used to help kill 77 people earlier this month. The story was first reported by the Sunday Telegraph, a London newspaper, which said it investigated thousands of online transactions over a seven-month period to sort of get to the bottom of this thing. It's reporting that Anders Behring Breivik used eBay to procure, among other things, sulfur powder, which the newspaper described as a key ingredient for the bomb that exploded in Oslo, killing eight people. And the paper also said he used eBay to order, among other items, a full-face respirator and a hazmat suit. Okay, we won't call it global warming, but it is official. July, which is ending tonight, was a scorcher. High temperatures in communities across the USA, according to USA Today, broke or tied records 2,676 times, almost doubled the number of a year ago, according to National Weather Service reports. Temperatures in Newark set an all-time record of 108. Highs in Atlantic City topped 105 for two straight days. Washington endured its hottest July since 1871. In Oklahoma City, temps topped 100 for 27 of the last 30 days of July. Dallas-Fort Worth is enduring its second longest stretch of consecutive 100-plus days at 30 and closing in on its all-time record, says the National Weather Service. And what's worse, August is unlikely to offer much relief, the forecasters are saying. How about this story? Polygamous leader Warren Jeffs, accused of sexual assault with two underage girls, girls that he took as his wives, has cast out his own defense lawyers and is asking a Texas court to follow God's words as he hears them. Jeffs is, of course, head of the breakaway Mormon group with an estimated 10,000 members. He startled this courtroom in San Angelo, Texas, on Thursday by firing his lawyers. This was a dream team of lawyers, and announcing that he's going to defend himself against these charges. These charges, by the way, that could put him in prison for the rest of his life. And it's the way he did it that really got everyone's attention. He says, I, meaning speaking about himself, I, the Lord God of heaven, call upon the court to cease this open prosecution against my pure holy way, he says, reading from this statement that he says was given to him from God. He told this judge after the jury was sent out of the room. He said, if the trial continues, Jeff says, God told him that he will send a scourge upon the counties of prosecutorial zeal to make humbled by sickness and death. Can you imagine his lawyer sitting there and he's telling the courtroom, okay, I don't want these guys to represent me, but by the way, if you continue with this, I'm going to call upon God and he's going to rain death and plagues on all of you. That's pretty bold for a guy to do it when he's facing life in prison. Time now to take our first break. When we come back, we go to the phones to find out what's on your minds this evening. I'll also mention the items we have in tonight's online version of Naps News. And then at the top of the hour, Ancient Aliens, producer and star Giorgio Tsoukalos. We've got a lot of ground to cover, a lot of solid ground to cover tonight, and we're going to have some fun doing it. So stay right there, Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. I'm George Knapp, in tonight on Coast to Coast AM for George Norrie. I want to say thanks a lot to all the listeners who joined Webmaster Lex and me for a Coast to Coast chat this past Wednesday night. I think Lex said we had about 300 people join us, and they peppered me with some pretty good questions. I tried to give answers that didn't drone on and on too much so that we could cover a lot of ground. I do look forward to doing that again sometime. Lex has posted excerpts from that exchange on the Coast to Coast website tonight. Also there, as usual, is the Naps News section with a couple of items that caught my eye this week. There's one article there about previous scientific claims of confirmed alien life on Earth. We're not talking about movie style aliens walking around, but different kinds of what are suspected as alien organisms. Scientists believe that these things came from somewhere else. There's a couple of examples. Also, a weather video from Dallas, this weather camera early in the morning caused quite a stir in that city. Camera caught this live image of, well, I'm not sure what it was. It's a light for sure, whether it was a bug that got too close or whether it was a lens flare or something more mysterious. So certainly looks a little more mysterious to me. And I know the Dallas TV station that uses this camera contacted its own UFO expert to kind of give some analysis. Take a look when you get a chance. We've got the video there. There's also an article that we found about the physics of time travel. Some scientists in Hong Kong say they have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that it can't be done. We cannot exceed Einstein's universal speed limit, so to speak. That's what they say anyway. I'm betting they're going to get an argument about that one. One other item there that's on our list in Naps News, it's a little bit of a flap. I don't know if you've seen this online, but a little bit of a flap over an object that was found by some explorers on the ocean floor. They were looking for something else entirely, but they picked out this thing on the floor. It looks disc-shaped. Some are now suggesting it looks like a crashed UFO. I guess it's way too early to have any kind of conclusion about it. Here's what I'm wondering. It's one of our coast listeners sent me a note before the program began saying, hey, that's kind of in shallow water. Shouldn't we have a definitive answer by now? Couldn't they just send a diver down there and get an answer? And I don't know how to answer that, but if anybody else does, send me a note about it, and we'll see if we can get to the bottom of it. Going now to the phones to see what's on your mind this evening. East of the Rockies, Johnny in Indiana. Hi, Johnny. How you doing?
Hello, George. I'm just wanted to tell you, you're one of my favorite guys here. I'm the host.
Thank you very much.
Perfect. I don't know.
Thanks.
I just love hearing your voice. When you come on, it's like you have the best voice. But I wanted to tell you a story that happened to my mom in Mexico. Actually, it happened to my brother, but my mom's the one that tells us. In Mexico, we live in the south over there. Well, we live in America now, but there's these things called chaneques, and they're like dwarfs. They're like gnomes, and legend goes that they abduct kids, and they make noise, and they just bug people, and they abduct kids. And see, my mom, they used to live behind this ditch, and that's occasionally where they live, near water. And anyways, my mom told me that she would lay outside selling stuff, and my brother would lay inside Diego, and he would cry occasionally, and she'd come in, be like, what's going on? And he'd be like, they're taking my toys, and they're bugging me. And she'd go yell at my brothers, and my brothers would be like, oh, we're not doing anything. We're out here. And eventually it kept happening, so she told my grandma, and my grandma told her that was chaneques, you know, those little dwarves. And those things supposedly gain trust of kids. They play with them, and then they start abusing them. And eventually when they got a lot of trust with them, they take them and they drown them. And they told my mom to, you know, make this little amulet for him, and it was mustard and some other herbs, and put it next to his heart. And according to my mom, ever since then, nothing ever happened to him. And I've talked to my brother, and he said things would happen. Those things were actually going on. I mean, I can't personally say, but it's one of the things that's really scary. That's always scared me, you know.
Tell me this. Two things, Johnny. How do I spell this?
Chaneques?
Yeah.
Chaneques. These are pre-Columbian things. I mean, they're spirits from the Aztecs. You can look it up. It's on the internet also.
Dan, did you ever sit your grandmother down and say, hey, can you tell me more about them, or ask your mom?
I never met my grandma, really, but my mom, she just knew that. But, I mean, if you ask people, and Mexicans, they usually have different names for them. They have, like, they're like, not the Wendigos, but wind or something. They're like these airs that will come in and disturb. I mean, they're known by different names in Mexico. They're not always known by chaneques, but I do know chaneques is the ancient word for them. And if you look them up, the ancients had a different way of telling them also. They would strand people, foreigners in the land. Not foreigners, but people who would get lost, they'd lose them even more. And it's pretty scary. It always scared me just because when I was little, I wanted those Smurf toys. And my mom told me not to get him, and that's when she told me this story. And it always stuck with me. And even now when the Smurfs are on TV, I always kind of feel uneasy.
I have heard these stories myself, and not using that name, but when we were working on our book about the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, the Bigelow Ranch. We interviewed and collected stories from many Native Americans, and it seems like there are versions of the same kind of story among many Native peoples, the Navajo and Hopi and the Utes. And I'm talking about even into modern times, where these little people, these little creatures, would come into people's houses, be up on the dinner table, and causing mischief here and there. But among many Native peoples, it's a fairly well-known kind of story, although I think they go by different names.
It's scary. If you look up on the YouTube, there's this this video of a duende, of a chaneque in Argentina, and it's pretty uneasy. It makes you feel uneasy after you watch it. I don't know if it's true. Videos on YouTube, you know, they can be altered, but it's worth a watch. Especially
hey, John. Hi, Johnny, I appreciate the call, and I'm going to write this down and take a look and check it out. And then if anybody else has any information, let us know. And I'll also ask our guest, Giorgio, because I'm betting that he has crossed paths with this kind of story as well. I appreciate the call. West of the Rockies, Barbara in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Barbara. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing fine. How are you doing tonight, George?
Oh, okay.
Right on. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say about the economy. I've got a friend, and she went to Germany in 08, and she told me something that really stuck in my memory. She said when she went there, everything she bought, even the things that we'd buy here from China for a dollar, over there it was like 1 euro to buy the same thing, only it was made in the EU, the European economy. And so I was wondering if, that's why Germany is so strong. It makes sense to me. They're all buying everything from the EU, you know, things that their people make, or, you know, everybody in Europe there. And it just made a lot of sense. If that wouldn't work for us, if everybody just started buying things made in America, you know, instead of somewhere else.
Well, I'm with you. I am definitely with you on that one, Barbara. I think we've made a conscious choice sort of somewhere along the way, or maybe it's an unconscious choice that we're going to buy stuff that's cheaper rather than something that employs Americans. I mean, we do it every day. I forget what the numbers are for I don't have anything against Walmart, but it is, you know, most of that material comes in from China. And it's a huge drain on the national economy, on the trade imbalance. And you don't want to get into things with tariffs and limiting trade. But also, you can't. It's hard to stand by and watch it happen. I don't know how the EU gets away with out allowing Chinese goods on such a major scale to come in. Maybe somebody else in the audience listening can explain how they can do it and we can't.
Thank you.
Barbara. Okay, thanks. Wish I could add more insight into that, Barbara, but thanks for the call. First-time caller, Stephen in Loomis, California. Hi, Stephen. What's on your mind?
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering for insight on China buying land in Idaho. Like, that seems a little suspicious. Why would they do that?
Well, you tell me. What do you know? What are you hearing about it? How much land are they buying? Where are they buying it at?
I hear they're buying it about 50 miles south of Boise and about 50,000 square acres. And say it's going to be like a self-sustained city.
Well, now that you mentioned it, I have heard about that. I guess, you can look at it a couple of different ways. One way is that people in Idaho, the people in the business community, are welcoming this investment. They think it's going to help kickstart their economy up there. Another way to look at it is a lesson that we have learned many times here in Las Vegas. Foreign investors who've come in figured they're going to buy up the town. When you buy land, you can't take it. You can't take it home with you. So if you're going to invest money and help the economy in the area where you buy the land, I think Chinese money spends pretty well. And it's not necessarily a threat. I know here in Las Vegas, the examples with the Arabs came into town with, when they were flush with oil money and they pretty much got fleeced. And then the Japanese, when they were riding high, came over and figured, well, we've got money and we like to gamble, so we surely can be good in the casino business. And they all got fleeced. And then the Chinese have come in and got fleeced. And I would say just because somebody buys up a whole bunch of land is not necessarily a bad thing. We could use the investment. The economy could use a kickstart. And like I said, they can't take it away with them. It has to be here. Chinese are pretty are looking way, way down the road in a lot of ways, in a lot of ways that I wish our country was looking way down the road. They've invested so heavily in, for example, in Africa. They're everywhere in Africa, investing, building companies, and more importantly, building relationships. And they're doing the same thing in South America. I appreciate that call. We'll go back to the phone lines with more of your questions and comments right after this. Bruce Hornsby in The Range taking us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM. When Doves Cry from Prince. We can call him Prince again, right? I'm not really always up on this stuff, but I think he's back to Prince. Coming up at the top of this hour, Giorgio Tsoukalos, producer and star of Ancient Aliens, the series airing on the History Channel, popular, controversial, and it's going to be covering, we're going to be covering a lot of our favorite stuff here on Coast to Coast, aliens, mysteries, historical conundrums from the Bermuda Triangle to stories about Atlantis, you name it. We'll get into all of it. We're taking a break right now, coming back with more of your calls, though, on Coast to Coast AM. I am looking forward to taking a couple of days off this upcoming week. I'm George Knapp in tonight for George Norrie. And one of the places I was looking to go is Sedona, Arizona, one of the most beautiful places on the planet, bar none. Blair is calling in on the wild line from Sedona. A little bit jealous there, Blair. You live in a nice little neck of the woods.
Well, you got that right, George. It sort of enhances people. You become more of who you truly are if you really tune into the energy. Iron in the rocks. Iron in your blood, susceptible to electromagnetic fields, all that kind of nice stuff.
A lot of weird stuff reported from Sedona. I get reports about it all the time.
You bet. Well, I had the opportunity, and God rest his soul, to have lunch with Dr. Brian O'Leary in Dallas back in 1989, George. And it was during his book tour for Exploring Inner and Outer Space.
Yeah, that's a great book. Great book.
Yeah. Whitley Strieber gave a nice little plug for him on the back. And basically, a NASA astronaut who had a PhD from Cal Berkeley, and he worked for the Cal Institute of Technology in Princeton. And he also was the author of Mars 1999. If you remember, back in the late 80s, George, the Soviet Union was still around, and there was joint talk about Soviet-American trips to Mars, and he was a proponent of that.
I do remember that. I interviewed him about it. In fact, one of the first things I ever talked to Brian O'Leary was about the face on Mars. I know a lot of people have basically written that off, but he had insight because he talked to some of his colleagues within NASA as how mystified they were when they first saw it. And they go, my gosh, that looks like a face. And of course, they immediately wanted to cover up and not give it any credence. But Brian was very brave to pursue these topics, even though he traveled in those kind of circles.
Well, he definitely was, and he was one of the first astronauts to talk about the importance of the individual in shaping his experience. His own inner space profoundly shapes the outer space. I'm quoting from page 61 of his book here. And he basically concludes with this whole idea that he needed to acknowledge, for example, his past mistakes with a sense of humility, feel love and forgiveness toward himself and others, and to move enthusiastically forward into a free and flowing life. That's page 155 of his book. So I really appreciate you allowing me to give a little tribute to Dr. O'Leary here.
Absolutely. You can't say enough good stuff about him. Again, what most impressed me most, Blair, was his courage. You know, he traveled in those circles, as you mentioned. He got a degree from UC Berkeley. He was teaching at an Ivy League school. I think he was on the faculty with Carl Sagan at the same time. I mean, and he was an astronaut. Besides, those aren't guys who want to talk about alien life forms or the possibility of the planet being visited, let alone all the other groundbreaking work that that Brian O'Leary did. And it's our world is a lesser place today for having him gone. Thanks for the call, Blair. Jerry in South Carolina. Hi, Jerry. What's on your mind?
I feel privileged to be a part of Coast tonight, and I was just wondering, anything new to report with the Interstate 80 disappearances?
Oh, I appreciate you asking that. We are going to do an update. In fact, I had asked the undersheriff to join me tonight, but it was not possible because he's traveling and has a scheduling conflict. But I promise you that the next time I'm here, we'll have either he or a member of the Carnes family come on. I'm sorry to report that there are no breaking developments in the story of the I-80 disappearance or the investigation of a possible serial killer. For those of you who didn't hear this program, we covered this some weeks ago and had a, a huge reaction from the Coast to Coast audience. We were only going to cover it for about 30 minutes and ended up being 4 hours, an entire program, then did an update again. Patrick Carnes has still not been found. His dog has not been found. However, because Coast to Coast listeners took such an interest in this, there have been developments in this case. The undersheriff there in the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office says so many leads came in from Coast to Coast listeners, in particular from truck drivers. He was able to winnow those down a little bit. He's got a letter that went out to 32 trucking companies that are identified as possible, I don't want to use the word suspects, but who possibly may have had one of their rigs on Interstate 80 at the time that Patrick Carnes disappeared. I'm not sure. I think right about now he should be getting some responses from those trucking companies. He's also got so much information from truckers about different GPS-type devices that are used, where cameras are placed on Interstate 80. So there's a lot of clues that came in. They're still sifting through them. Unfortunately, Patrick Carnes or his remains have not been found. There was one really good clue that came in from a Coast listener, a truck driver. Actually, he had given this information to police before our broadcast. He said he had seen this large dog along Interstate 80 running around in the desert out there looking lost. This was prior to our broadcast, and then he followed it up, I think, after the broadcast, realizing the significance. He just thought he was reporting a missing dog or a lost dog. But if somebody could find that dog, it's entirely possible the dog is being held by someone who didn't hear the broadcast, didn't see the news story, didn't read the newspaper about it. They're just hanging on to this dog, figuring they're doing a good deed by not allowing the dog to die out there in the desert. So we are still hopeful that there can be a break in this case. And Jerry, as you mentioned, we are going to follow it up. I'm going to have the undersheriff come back on the program just as soon as it's convenient for him. Thank you for that call. David in Detroit on the wild card line. Hi, David. Dave, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, how you doing? What's on your mind?
Well, I want to tell you a little something that happened to me on Friday. I was on my way into work. I live about 15 miles from Detroit Metro Airport, so I'm not used. I'm used to seeing lines of airplanes in the sky. But I got on the highway on my way to work, and there's a line of lights across the road, 6-8 of them. And I'm thinking, okay, that's kind of odd that all the airplanes are stacked up like that this time of night. And then I realized that they're not white lights like airplanes. They're all red lights. And I'm watching them, and as I'm watching them, a few more of them appear, just, you know, blink on, blink on, blink on, until there were about 15 of them. And then all of a sudden, they went from, you know, the ends of them came in towards the middle, and they became one light. Didn't get any bigger, didn't get any brighter. And it just hung there for the longest time. And I stopped my car on the side of the road trying to take a picture of it, but the resolution on my camera was so bad you can't even tell that, you know, I'm just looking at black sky for all you could see.
Sure, it's like a cell phone camera?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
The oddest thing. It was the oddest thing. I mean, as I got on the highway, here are these lights across the road, and then to watch them go down into one light.
Well, that sure as heck doesn't sound like any plane that I've ever heard of.
No, and, you know, I've seen a lot of, on the TV shows, when they talk about flares and stuff like that, that there was, these didn't move. They hovered in one spot. They appeared just out of nowhere. So it's not like, you know, somebody shot something up from the ground or dropped something from the sky. And there was no trailing. They didn't give off light. You know, they didn't light up the sky around them. They didn't light up the clouds around them or anything. They were just there.
Yeah, those cases where, and there are some rare cases, well, not that rare, but there are some good cases where the lights will fold in on each other and sort of become one. I think those are very compelling cases because it's hard to explain it as flares or an airplane. David, I would encourage you, I don't know if you've reported it anywhere, but I would encourage you to either call Metro, MUFON, your local MUFON representative there in the Detroit area, or go online. There's something called the National UFO Reporting Center. It's run by a guy named Peter Davenport, and it's important for people to make reports on these things, for the information to be recorded somewhere, because you never know. There might have been three or four other people who saw the same thing there in your area, and every report that comes in is a little bit of extra evidence or testimony in support of what's really going on. So I appreciate you sharing the story with us. You were going
to
say?
Thank you. And I wasn't sure who I could report it to or what to do with it, but I had to tell somebody. I was going crazy thinking I'd seen something, you know?
No, you're not crazy. And you know what? People have got away with making folks think they're crazy for too long. Just because you see something in the sky doesn't, and that it's unusual, doesn't mean you're crazy. And we should report it. National UFO Reporting Center, you can go right online and do it there. And I would bet that given the strange nature of this case, that somebody will get back to you on it. David, thank you for that call. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I look forward to hearing more about it. Richard in Roslyn, New York. Hi, Richard. How you doing?
Hey, George. How you doing? You got a lot of good calls tonight, so I won't keep you long. I just had a couple of quick questions.
Okay.
The fellow from Sedona, Blair, had mentioned Whitley Strieber, and about a year ago, he was on Coast to Coast, and he mentioned that he'd written a book called The Grays.
Yes.
And that there was a movie in production.
Yes.
And that it would be out shortly, they figured, by the summer. But I haven't heard a thing about it. That was the first question. And the second thing was, I was wondering if you ever heard of this guy named John Moore, who either wrote a book or did a video called The Myth of Global Warming.
I have not. But I know that's a pretty controversial topic, and there's been a lot of documentaries produced on it, both sides. What do you tell me? What can you tell me
about
it?
I listened to a radio show out of Canada called The Conspiracy Show once a week. But the trouble is, you know, the reception from New York to Toronto, wherever it comes out of Canada, is sometimes very weak. So it was a broken broadcast. I couldn't hear all. But the general gist of the thing, I thought it was another thing just about global warming, like you said. But then he starts talking about he got his information from a higher-up in the Navy who had something to do with the Joint Chiefs, or he was connected with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and information had come to him about, he said, the things he was saying were, like, really horrific. He said anybody who doesn't live above 400 feet above sea level, after about 2 years from now, they're going to need an aqualung. He said the oceans are going to rise. They've invented this myth of global warming to cover up the real truth that, according to him, the real truth has something to do with this planet Nibiru or Nibiru. You know the one I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I sure do. Yeah.
And supposedly there's observatories in Antarctica. We own one, and there's another country that owns another one. No one else can really get a good view of the thing from where it is right now. But supposedly it's entering the solar system, and something about gravitational waves it's throwing forth are going to tilt the Earth on its axis, like about 19 degrees, but a sudden shift. You know, if you carry, a big gallon bowl of water and all of a sudden you move too quickly and how the water sloshes in the bowl? He said the oceans are going to do that to the point where the Great Lakes become one. A large portion of the coastline is overridden by water for a while, and horrific kind of stuff. And he was saying that the people who are high up in the government, most senators, know something of this, and that a lot of the people in the higher-ups in the Army were told to buy land only somewhere in the Ozarks or something. I don't know why that was a safe place to live. But it was he seemed to have, I don't know how the credibility is. I don't know. Nobody checked into his sources or anything. But the guy, I'd love to hear this guy get on Coast to Coast, because he had a story that would make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, I tell you.
Well, the story about Planet X has been covered a lot of times on Coast to Coast. We're always looking for new input. What's the guy's name again?
John Moore, like Michael Moore.
John Moore.
John is his first name.
Okay, I'll mention
and
that
the thing
to the producers.
He did, I don't know whether it was a video or a book. It's called The Myth of Global Warming. But the thing is, it's not really about global warming. It's about that's a government like front story to cover up the real truth, that because they know what's going to happen. They know the oceans are going to start rising drastically, and they're going to push it off on global warming because they figure they can't save everybody, but they don't want panic. They want people to be productive right up until the end comes, because when the end comes, it's going to be like, you know, a fly getting swatted. There isn't going to be no time. It'll be a very quick kind of a thing for the people that don't make it. But it was really interesting, you know, must-hear radio kind of stuff late at night. But anyway, did you hear anything about the picture of the Grays?
No, I know about the book because Whitley was on, I think, with George Norrie to talk about it. And then I had Whitley on the program to talk about another of his books, The Key, about 2 months ago or so.
Yeah, I remember that. And I was hoping that he would mention it then, but nothing. It's like all of a sudden the Grays just disappeared, and I wonder.
Well, here's the deal. I don't know if you've had any dealings yourself with Hollywood, but I have. I've been down the road a couple of times with them, and I find that basically anything that anyone tells you from Hollywood, you can basically assume that it's a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
That it's a lie. It is certainly not information that you would take to the bank or start planning your life around, because nothing that they ever say comes true, at least in my experience. I'm sure that that's not the way it is for Johnny Depp or something like that, but I would think even Whitley, who has had some success with Hollywood folks, Hollywood versions of his books.
And all that stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But even somebody like him could get led down the primrose path by Hollywood producers. So the fact that it's not out yet I wouldn't read a whole lot into that. But
thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you. I'll let you get back to some of those calls. They're really good tonight.
Okay, Richard. Thank you very much. We'll try to get one more in. Jim in Arkansas. How you doing, Jim? Hello, Jim. Are you there?
That's Alex in Toronto, actually.
Oh, Alex. How you doing? On our international line. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Not that it's maybe proof of my call, but Prince is Prince, his name.
Okay. All right.
And he lives actually 15 minutes from me, drive.
You hang out, do you?
I wish. but the reason my call is, I heard your time travel, bit of news in the beginning, and, I find it interesting that these Hong Kong researchers would say what they said, considering, the amount of money that the Chinese government, Indian government, Japanese governments are putting into, time control technologies, probably mainly for warfare. I think you interviewed Ronald Mallett or David Anderson. Those are some of the preeminent researchers in the States that are involved in this research, and they're getting results. And there's a lot of great science behind it, and they're getting real results. And so that the other interesting thing is China recently has banned any movies in their country that contain any kind of time travel. So science fiction is okay, but no time travel. And now you have these Hong Kong researchers saying that it's absolutely impossible. So I find that kind of interesting, and that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, I can see where you're heading with that. You know, the scientists can't agree on whether vitamin C is good for you. They can't. they still don't agree if smoking is bad. So the fact that somebody comes out with a paper says time travel is impossible does not necessarily mean time travel is impossible. It just means that here's a new voice to be heard in the debate. I think you make a pretty good point, specifically about China, which, from according to people that I have talked to, is investing money in time travel research and things as exotic as teleportation.
They're very good with their innovation, so I don't see why they would ignore a huge part of that innovation. Why ignore that? Why not pursue it, right?
Yeah, we had a friend of ours named Dr. Eric Davis, who has done some work on teleportation, did a survey for the U.S. Air Force lab about teleportation, and found out that a lot of work in that exotic topic is going on in China, although I think you'd have the official reaction from the Chinese government would be that they wouldn't give it a whole lot of credence.
Right.
Alex, I appreciate the call, and you give Prince our best when next time you guys are hanging out. Thank you. We'll try to slip one more call in. Glenn in Texas on East of the Rockies line. Better make it quick, Glenn. What's on your mind?
Great to talk to you, George. I'll just cut right to the chase.
Okay.
I noticed that UFOologists have dismissed the Horton brothers as if they were just crackpots that tried to complete a flying wing. But their litany goes all the way back to 1931. Their first trials, 1934, four different flying wings, 1938, government backing, even had one with its propeller blades folded away in flight.
Hey, Glenn, I'm sorry to have cut you off there, but you're absolutely right. The Horton brothers were amazing guys, engineers, flight engineers who created some amazing stuff. I guess we just don't know if they created something that could have flown from Europe to Roswell, looking like a flying saucer. Appreciate the call. Appreciate all the calls. Giorgio Tsoukalos coming up to talk about ancient aliens. Blondie with Rapture taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM.